Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another... This is one of the most famous songs in Western history.
I love you, Phil. You had me at hello.
It's called Man with the Harmonica. It's from Once Upon a Time in the West. And therefore, you would have no sense that we're doing the Prisoner After Show here on AfterBuzz TV for Throwback Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We have Steph Z.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And we have Meredith Placco.
Hey, what's up?
And they can be found on Twitter at IamStephZ and MPlacco until she decides to change that.
I keep threatening and I never do. Also, this music is super somber.
Well, welcome to Phil's life. I'm just kidding. Well, oh, it's already started.
So nice
I know
today.
You look real cute. You got
it's very very cowboyish.
Yeah,
see,
it
this is where the music goes dark.
I should have worn my freaking holster.
I should have worn my cowboy boots.
All right. We're hinting at it. Hope you know what we're talking about. We're talking Living in Harmony because that's the episode and everything's all about the Western. This episode throws everything on its head.
Yes.
Sideways, front ways, back ways, whatever ways you want to throw it.
The Wild Wild West, man.
That's it. That's it. That is indeed. So let's start with overall impressions because Steph Z's texting to me. I gave her the premise. I said, this is going to be different. Don't be alarmed.
Yeah, you didn't respond to my text last night. My feelings were a little hurt.
Aww. That's okay.
I didn't want to respond because I wanted you to just get through it.
I know. I got through it. I have mixed feelings about this. I'm a fan of the show, The Prisoner, a lot. This episode, Living in Harmony, I mean... it was cool. Like, it was interesting watching it, but it wasn't... as interesting as a lot of the other episodes where you had to figure out, and I'm trying to connect numbers, and I'm trying to figure out who's got what, who knows what. Like, it was very, very clear, I think very early, that this was some type of mind-altering something. There was a very apparent number two in the Western world. There was a very apparent woman that was trying to coerce him into giving information. There was, you know, the villain redhead guy who, you know what I mean?
Always
like, it was very, there was always the, like, it was very much textbook
prisoner.
It was textbook generic prisoner, but with a horse.
With a horse.
with a horse.
All right, Meredith, what about you?
You know, it definitely deviates from previous episodes. It is grounded in the same tropes we've come to expect The Prisoner. I would definitely say this was an allegory of an episode. It is one of the harder ones to sit through, though. Not because it takes you out of the village and puts you in a 100-year-old village. Just the pacing was off. You know, the stuff with the kid. The evil redhead kid. Him being mute felt a little awkward.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he was only mute until he wasn't.
Yeah, until he wasn't. There was like really no reason for that. It wasn't like a really cool stylistic choice like they did one of the previous episodes where we didn't have any speaking except for other languages for like the first 15 minutes. So, you know, it was just a harder episode to stomach. But in many ways, it was a very textbook episode, and it didn't really bring anything new to the table other than, and I'm sure we'll get into this later, but number six mentions how he's going to be moving along because he has another job offer, which is an interesting thing to note because we never, you know, is that actually something as to why he resigned?
I also, to add to that, there was a couple points where I thought that they were hinting at the resignation as well. So again, you could tell that this was trying to be some sort of sequence, dream sequence or mind-altering sequence to get
him to say it because he felt like maybe he wasn't in the village. But also to me, it was interesting that we saw a lot of things in this episode that we never see. We see number six drinking. We see him caring about a woman.
Yeah.
And we see a kid.
Yeah. He's not really a kid. He's just the kid.
No, we see a child.
No, we see a child.
Kid. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
In like, true. After a draw scene, which draws so fun. I wish that's how people solve their problems these days.
Bang, bang. Sad.
Who's got the quicker hands?
I have a funny story about that
one. We could just do a draw-off, like an art drawing off.
That would be hilarious. That would be a hilarious skit. The yeah, see people, like two people walking up to each other, and they whip out their pen and pen.
Fair enough.
I love that. All Let's right. do that.
We're
from
doing
now on.
That. We're creating that game.
That is how we're going to
settle
all the
skits. And then we'll bring it on
Shark Tank. Oh my God, yes.
Full circle.
All right. You guys settle that on Instagram, why don't you?
Oh, we will. I'm going to draw.
Here's what I like. I mean, for me, I actually like this. I love Westerns. The only thing that that wasn't for me was, you know, it's very boxed, right? Because it's TV, it's 4x3, whereas Westerns are so landscape. Mm-hmm. So I was missing that element of it. But other than that, I love Westerns, and I got into this episode. And I get it.
I love you.
Overall, it's simple. It's simple. It's one of those things. It is in that way. But, you know, it did start the genre of telefantasy. Right, and I want to talk about that in one moment. But it's here's the thing. It's an episode very much in my overview. There's debate on who really came up with the idea. Was it McGoohan? Was it someone else? But it just feels like any you know those sitcom episodes that they always go to Hawaii or they go on spring break.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And why do they do that? Well, it's because the producers just want to go on spring break.
That's what,
and they just wanted to make a Western, and they did, and it's great.
Yeah, fine. I'm with you. I get it.
Well, okay, so it's interesting you say that you attribute this to the start of the telefantasy series, though Star Trek original series started in 66.
But they didn't do it. Right, so the way I'm defining telefantasy, mm-hmm. it's when you take a set of characters from a particular genre and reshuffle those same characters into a different thing. So there's a picture we have of, ironically, Boy Meets World, of all things, right? And for those of you unfamiliar, it's a story about a boy growing up, you know, through high school and so on and so forth. And they take the same characters, give them slightly different names, and throw them into World War II time era, and they have to deal with the same problems, but just in 1940s.
Okay, fair enough. Because I'm not as well versed in TOS as I am TNG, and obviously in TNG they have like the weird holodeck episodes, or where Q makes them think that they're part of a Robin Hood scenario. Yeah. So okay, I get that. I can concede to that. That's pretty rad though, because I love the weird telefantasy episodes of certain shows.
Yeah, and historically they're supposed to be lighter, right? Yeah. They're not supposed to be. I mean, this is as dark as they get. The other, you know, the other ones are supposed to be light and make fun of the genre itself.
Yeah. Sorry, I was looking for a note while you guys were talking about that I wrote last night because I couldn't remember exactly. But also to add to your point earlier about his resignation and stuff, like when he was saying what were the reasons number six, he said when number two is saying to number six, what were the reasons for your resignation? And he was like, my reasons. He made it sound to me that he was forced to resign. Did anybody else catch that?
Well, he wasn't forced to resign in the episode. He very much forcefully was like, here you go, I'm out.
No, I mean that he was forced to resign.
From a societal standpoint?
No, but you know how sometimes in big corporations something happens and it's like, you need to resign or else we're going to expose XYZ and ruin your life.
Well, I've...
And this is like the second or third time I've had that note that something alluded to the fact that he didn't resign on all of his own accord.
But I've always maintained that there was something that's happened behind the scenes that he like it kind of forced his hand.
Yeah.
I felt like he wanted to resign, but he wanted to resign because of something he knew or saw, or, you know, he just couldn't deal with whatever was happening anymore.
See, but I almost felt like he's forced to resign because he was told to resign.
As if maybe he was taking the heat for something, like a sacrificial lamb.
Either that, or you know how, you know, it's like, you know, a big corporation, say if there's something that goes against company policy or whatever, and they say, okay, we're either going to fire you
or you need to resign tomorrow, because if we fire you, then we're going to have to go to X, Y, Z, and it's going to going to come out all this other stuff that you don't
want
to know.
I think it's more so from the standpoint of they changed – I think you're right. They changed company policy, but it's like, okay, from now, I'm going to take it to an extreme, right?
Yeah.
From now on, we're killing all kids. And he's like, well – I don't want to kill kids.
He just takes it there. I'm
giving the most brutal example because
it makes me worry about your dogs.
No, because I'm saying, okay, I would say we all agree that killing kids is not good. So therefore, if that was the company policy, you'd be like, well, no way, I'm out. No way I'm doing that. Here's my resignation. Gone.
Fair enough. But then he also says, you know, to the sheriff, well, not to the sheriff, excuse me, to the judge, he's like, well, you know, I'm moving on. I have another offer. So it makes me wonder, did he quit because he was forced to resign, or did he get a better offer? Maybe he is a double spy.
I don't know.
Ooh, I like the double spy.
Well, let's take it back. By the way, for Steph Z and all the other fans who are kind of with us for the first time, the last three episodes, get ready. Get ready.
Even crazier than this?
Yeah.
This is it. This is the beginning of...
the end.
We're there.
Whoa, dude. Yeah.
So we talked about how this was the kind of the beginning of telefantasy. Mm-hmm. It defied the spy genre very much. So ITV, because of how different it was, ITV fought to get an opening title into it. But McGoohan, he just literally did not want it. And behind his back, they just put it in. So at the top of the show, for those of you who are watching, you know, we always put up the title slate. And in Living Harmony, we did, and that was that, because they did it behind his back. He was so mad.
He didn't even want, because he didn't want people to know that they were watching The Prisoner, right? He was trying to actually trick viewers.
Exactly.
McGoohan,
you're so sadistic.
You're so good.
That good, though?
It's art house. I mean, what he's doing is something, I mean, you know, and you can.
But it's like, in the same sense, it's like, you, if you're a fan of a show and you tune in every week or whatever for this show and you're like all set, you got your food ready, you got your popcorn ready, whatever, you're ready to watch a show, and then you see something else, you might be like, oh man, did I mess up?
But
like,
everything about The Prisoner has been McGoohan's commentary and subverting what people knew at the time. I mean, in so many ways, like, I could argue that The Prisoner, you know, ranks up there with some of the really great art videos of the 60s and 70s, where you know, performance pieces and just, you know, real mind trips where people try to get you to think outside the box. And he managed to do this on a network level.
I just don't know why one would do that. Because walking away from this episode, we're not all being like, oh my god, this was brilliant! I didn't even realize I was watching it, and then the underlining subliminal message was rad!
But
like,
not all art is brilliant. Not all art is going to be enjoyed.
Here's the thing, right? I mean, go back to the idea. You were shocked from the beginning, right? I mean, you weren't expecting this. Were you expecting this?
No.
Then he did his job, right? And so, but I mean, this was a byproduct of it. Because of how violent it was, they had to move it to the 10 o'clock slot in England. So
people were really confused.
Yeah. So you got your popcorn ready at 9 p.m. or whatever.
And you're like, what in the what?
And no prisoner. And then you're ready to go to bed, and you see McGoohan on a Western. You're like, what?
He made it in America!
You know, which actually is kind of, in a way, cool that, like, that would never fly now. Because people would be so worried about ratings, and we're going to lose numbers for that day, and blah, blah, blah. So that's, I think, why maybe I'm trained to think in that way. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, people aren't going to know where to find it. But it wasn't about the system so much back then, so...
Yeah, it was about creating something that was outside of the system.
Right, fine. It was a good idea. It was an entertaining Western. I'm not disagreeing with the fact that it was an entertaining Western. I'm just signed up for Prisoner.
Yeah, when you look at it in the overarching episode list of The Prisoner, like, the show itself, the episode itself, was a good episode. It fits a little oddly into the series, mainly because, and I could have accepted, and I'm going to just jump to the end here, I could have accepted everything until the very, very end where they go back to the town. And I don't want to say anything to spoil it, but it was what happened there that broke it for me.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about the episode, so we're going to spoil it. You know, but a couple of things. Number one, I do want to talk about in the U.S., they banned it for a long time because of how violent it was.
Wow.
This episode.
Man, we are so desensitized.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, I actually was sitting there. One of my notes is actually to the effect of how they don't show anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, like even when the guy, you know, Kathy's brother is getting hung, which was crazy, like that they put him on a horse and they put his head in a noose and then horse, get out of here, giddy up. But you don't see it.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see any of the violence. There was no blood.
Here's the thing. Well,
on his hand, on his cheek, fine. But besides that, there was no real... Yeah.
Here's the thing, right?
There was death. There was just no violence to me.
Because I do want to get to the episode, and I know we're very pressed for time. Yeah. Thanks to you, Steph C. So, viewers...
Thanks to me? I think it's more thanks to Meredith.
Oh, why? Because she's the redhead? Anyway, no, the point being, here's the thing, right? That was what they said is because of the dude, the violence.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what they were ultimately saying, I mean, this is very much a Western, how American is the Western, right? And so it's directly commentating on that. And so I think because of the messages involved that we're going to get into, they didn't want that, right? And before we fully dive in, again, in terms of taking credit for the story, there's a lot of people, you know, McGoohan always wanted to make a Western. Mm-hmm. Some say McGoohan and Tomlin saw ideas. So Ian Rakoff, who has a very good book, and you can read a lot of this stuff there, you know, he attributes it to it because and it has a lot of his feelings towards Vietnam and the South African apartheid. You know, so that's kind of sewn into. And he gets credit for the story.
I did not get the apartheid from this episode.
Well,
that's interesting. He says
it's in there, so. Check
it
out.
Did you get it?
I mean, I got a commentary on violence and nonviolence and community and, you know, and so we'll obviously talk about that. But apartheid specifically, no. I mean, I think the roots of apartheid in terms of violence are there and you know, great.
I guess that's one of the cultural differences and also the time not, you know, it not being the 60s for us. So,
yeah.
Interesting.
And one last bit of fact before we get into everything. Actually, two. I'm sorry. People said this was one of the toughest shoots. They said it took 5 weeks to film, although production-wise, it only took 10, mm-hmm. so it wasn't that crazy.
10 days.
And Alexis Kanner, he shared a dressing room with a leopard. A leopard from 2001, A Space Odyssey, from the sequence The Dawn of Man. So there's the leopard right there that he shared a room with.
Hanging out, like, you know, you and the leopard get the green room. It's cool, man. That's
all right. I've suppressed you guys enough.
Find that,
let's get into it. You know, we've kind of talked about the sim. There's a picture we have right of the opening,
Senor.
There's Senor, right? So it's very much he resigns and he wakes up in an unknown place. So much so that there's someone telling him, "You'll find out, Senor. It's not wise to ask." And it's very much like the village is arrival.
It completely mirrors the entire thing,
and it's meant to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we agree on that.
Why you don't need the title, because if you should get it, like, right off the bat. I think that's why McGoohan fought to not have the title card, because he wanted, you know, just commentary.
Mm. Yeah, and obviously you guys got the irony of harmony and it being called harmony.
Yes.
Nothing is in harmony there. Nothing's harmonious at all whatsoever.
Well, especially
that'd
with
be
all
like
the violence.
Us all singing together.
Yeah. From the get-go, there's no harmony in that town at all.
Right.
Because you wouldn't, if there was harmony, you wouldn't have to kill someone.
This is true.
Well, you know, I won't go there yet.
Okay. So, for me, I have a very good definition of a Western, as I've defined it, but, you know, I think part of what to understand this episode, we have to define what is a Western, right? And so, for you guys, what is a Western? And what, you know, obviously there's the classic ones, but the genre conventions.
You know, there's usually a sheriff, there's usually a bad guy, there's usually someone in trouble, generally a lady, or a town, or both, and there's usually guns and a shootout and horses. That's a Western.
Steph, anything to add? Or
I would trim it down to whiskey, guns, and horses.
There you go.
And girls, but there's always a brothel. Come on.
There's always, whiskey, guns, girls, and horses.
There we go. Whiskey, guns, and girls. I like that.
That's a good
band
name.
That's like a song, yeah.
We're gonna make a harmonious song called Whiskey, Guns, and Girls.
Excellent.
Excellent.
I'm in. As long as I'm backup, not lead.
We will be singing to that to you next week.
So for me, you know, a lot of people, in terms of the critical analysis, they write that it is this is not a historical Western, but a filmic Western, right? So taking classics, like in terms of number six, people attribute him to Clint Eastwood, The Man with No Name, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just even look at...
Oh, yeah.
If you look at that picture versus, like, what McGoohan was, not 100% similar.
Oh, look at him.
But, I know. That's a man. Sorry, I love Clint Eastwood and I love Westerns. What can I say? I grew up watching this.
I grew up watching Westerns.
All of a sudden, I have the Bonanza song in my head.
Sorry. See, they're classic.
They're totally classic. They're just not The Prisoner.
Well, have you guys, you know, in terms of kind of allegorical and how, in terms of methodology, Once Upon a Time in the West is attributed to this, or High Noon, where there's politics involved, and there's, you know, the pacing.
Yeah, The Reluctant Sheriff.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So check those out if you haven't
politics
seen them.
Politics is always involved in a Western, too.
Yeah, a lot of times. So
doesn't sound as good as Whiskey, Girls, and Guns, but... No.
But they're all there. It's all
I know. Yeah, it's all there.
You know, but the politics is there, so that way the main guy who doesn't want to work has the whiskey, guns, and girls.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what they want.
Yeah.
In terms of what they want, the prisoner here, they want him to be a sheriff in Harmony. Steph, you've already kind of spoken about this, but in terms of that as the plot element.
Well. I mean, are we trying to say that they want him to run the village with that statement? I mean, I don't know that that's really what they want.
I think they want him to subvert.
Definitely want him to subvert, but not be the sheriff. Well, but I guess, again, there was, like, even when he became the sheriff, it was that he wasn't in full control.
Mm-hmm. Very similar to when they wanted him to be number two.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But it was like they wanted him, similar. They wanted him to be number two, but then they didn't. Like,
yeah, as a figurehead,
which kind of is, sorry, what politics are today. Just saying.
I mean,
we'll talk more about that on our next show.
Yeah.
I think there's very much, they very much made a statement that the village can happen at any point in time, even space and whatever. And it does have similarities, just even from a production standpoint, right? The jail cell has kind of random stuff and posters, much like the village would. And then the kangaroo court, we've seen that similar to Dance of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then... you know, the hostility of the town folk is very similar to Change of Mind that we just did recently. So all these elements are there that we've seen. Again, we've seen them in the past now, just in a different new light. And I don't know, maybe the idea was to open up our minds that that this is everywhere and it's not just in the village, and a slow process to make you have to learn this fact.
Right.
And I guess Steph C is just a quicker learner than the rest of us.
Sorry.
It happens. Oh, man. Let's talk about the kid.
The kid.
There's three levels that I view the kid as.
Which kid are you talking about? The creep kid?
The redhead.
Or the kid. Okay.
The redhead kid.
Yeah.
Not the child that we see
creeper.
In the NC. Yeah, the creeper.
Yeah. Nope.
That kid
Super
right there.
Creeper!
Did not like him.
I want to punch him in the face. He reminded me of a creepy clown.
Yeah, he did.
And I like clowns.
And that wasn't on my analysis, but there you go. We could call him authority, death, infantilism, and creepy clown.
He didn't remind me of authority at all, because he didn't really have any.
He seemed like he was always struggling.
Well, but even in that, even when he was like the jail keeper, whatever you call that person, like the crypt keeper, but he was so dumb.
Yeah, he seemed like someone...
he got played. Like, I wouldn't think of him as authoritative. I would think of him as a schmuck.
Well, he's somebody who wants authority and wants the respect that comes with it, but fights like a screaming child having a temper tantrum to get it.
Here's one of the reasons why I think ultimately they partly pulled it off. You know, this was one of the reasons the U.S. disliked it, because of the similarities to Harpo Marx. You know, there's a photo we have of Harpo and Marx, and it's very much that, you know, Harpo is always trying to get at something, but he can't, and he's a mute, he's unable to talk. And so when you put Harpo or Marx in this position of guarding the jail cell and having some authority, yeah, it's making fun of the situation, and it is very much clown-like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's a creepy clown.
He did originally have lines in the script. Want to do a line reading? You want to be the kid or number six?
Wait, you have this?
Yeah.
Look, yes, right if there. You read your rundown.
I didn't read my rundown.
Do you want to be six or you want to be the kid?
I want to be the creeper, but I don't see where are we looking?
Right there at the top.
Okay.
All right, so you're going to
do that
the kid.
In your best Hollywood voice.
Maybe you don't know who I am. I'm the kid.
And then the next one?
I'm the best. I'm the fastest.
You're certainly the loudest.
Don't you know who I am? I mean, come on. That's what he's saying.
I'm
actually, that was a very good choice that they didn't say that, because I probably would have laughed. I would have been like, are you, like, it would have been so comical. And you know when you watch stuff and you laugh and it's not intended to be funny, it's just so terrible.
Yeah.
That and that probably I would have been like, oh my god, he was the worst, and then he freaking spoke.
Yeah.
That would have what I've been saying.
Here's the thing, you don't think that he was meant to be that it was meant to be comical? I mean, the line, you're certainly the loudest, that's a punchline.
Well, that's comical. I think number six's response was great. And in vain of number six, it's just up until that point we haven't
I feel like that's meant to be sarcastic, not comical.
Which could be both.
Which could be both, yeah. But it's not like a hee-hee. It's like a, whoa, he just said that. No?
No, I don't think so.
Could be fine.
I don't know. It depends on. But I do like the fact that they pulled out a lot of his lines from the original script, and they made him very much mute up until the end when he dies.
I don't know.
Creeper.
Come
on. Who kills himself off of, like, a 10... There was, like, 10 stairs.
I mean, he could have at least broken a neck.
It was weak.
Yeah.
It was weak.
Okay, and that was... This is where I had the biggest issue with this episode. And can I go there yet? Can I go there yet?
Yeah, we're going to the reality?
Yeah, okay. Right. So it was fine. When they pulled number six out of the situation, that was great. That was good. His disorientation. I love the whole thing with the cardboard cutouts. That was wonderful. Him going to confront... to the kid and the woman, great scene. And even her reaction where it's kind of like, oh, somebody got into this a little too deep, which I thought was a great commentary on the woman, because it seemed like she really did fall in love with number six. Mm-hmm. But then out of nowhere, creepy redhead is like, oh, I really loved the woman the whole time. And then they go back to the fake Western set, and he just acts like, okay, so here's the thing. As it was established, number six was the one that was put into this world. The others were just kind of providing voiceover. They were not also immersed into this world through drug therapy.
They were cardboard cutouts.
Yeah. It was just their voices. So how unhinged was the kid that he felt that he was also part of this world, even though he didn't have any of the corruption or the mind control to make him part of it? Like, it was just, that was so unbelievable to me. And that was where my real issue with this episode, where it finally broke for me. I'm like, I didn't. It wasn't coming. It wasn't established. It didn't feel like it had any place being there.
It was a little weak, yeah.
Well, this was
definitely not Billy the Kid.
Mm-mm.
This was our first dive into cyberpunk, and you know, they didn't know what computers were
good
at the
man.
Time.
Good
and,
man
and
for so noting on. That.
You know, so hey, I give him credit for trying.
I definitely give him credit for trying, but I do agree with Meredith in the fact that crossover was like, but wait, number six can make that distinction, and he was the one in it, and now he's just...
But here's what you have to understand, right? His mind is... Number six's mind is way stronger. We've established that, if
totally.
Nothing else, in the past episodes. Whereas the kid, I mean, in the fantasy itself, and granted he was playing a role, right?
Right. But he was just a voice. He wasn't immersed into it. So I guess for me, the break, his psychological break was not... grounded enough for me to accept that as a viewer, because unless he was also immersed in that world, not just like us sitting around a table providing voiceover to characters essentially in a video game.
But in essence, was it meant to be that? Because considering he is almost the pawn to number two and does whatever number two says. That he's that weak.
Oh, do you think number two told him to go kill himself?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying number two kind of There's always someone that number two plays on to go do the dirty work.
Yeah, but just the way...
The weaker person.
Just the way when number two walked in and he saw Kathy and the kid dead, yeah. And the way Magoo and number six just walked out, like, this is your fault. This is you've reaped, you know, reap what you've sown. And just that, yeah. Like, that moment right there was really strong. I really liked that because while there were no words exchanged, there was so much weight and emotion put on that
and
one little bit.
Number two did say to the kid, I told you just to scare her, not kill her, but that was before, but maybe he's just following an order. I don't know. Weird. It was weird.
Yeah.
It just got a little weird. The thing that I feel like I want to touch upon, and I know it could be a very long conversation, but we can just touch upon it, is the fact that number six, when he was the sheriff, he did not want to wear a gun. And I feel like that's a huge thing that, you know, even in today with all this gun violence that we have, and you look at these other countries that the police or the law enforcement don't wear guns, mm-hmm. and what happens as opposed to when they do.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about that. I mean, I think that's one of the very key things of why the U.S. didn't necessarily want it, right? But ironically, here's Batman, right? So iconic of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And Alexa, since you're closer, do you want to read what it says, what Batman is saying in this comic?
Sure. This is the weapon of the enemy. We do not need it. We will not use it. A gun is a coward's weapon, a liar's weapon.
Ooh. That's right. So McGowan and number six, he doesn't take a gun. He takes the badge because it's a symbol of respect, mm-hmm. and he can go about and do it in that way. But then eventually, as he becomes corrupted by the system, and you know it leads to Kathy's death, that's when he swaps out, and he no longer wants respect and authority. He's just lawless.
Well, see, I read that different. I don't think he succumbed to the system and then wanted to go fight guns with guns. I feel like it's, you know, and it's almost the unspoken rule for me is in a way, too. It's like, I would never use violence towards someone unless you hurt someone I love. Like, that's the line you cross. You know what I mean? Like, there's been situations, you know, throughout high school, like, you see fights, you see this. Like, I'm always the person to jump in and, like, defuse the situation or talk people out of it. But once someone crosses that line and...
But, okay, so let me ask you this. So in terms of the badge then, so what you're saying, you know, you're stepping outside. You are very knowingly taking an action that you know... From the law perspective,
is not correct. Yeah. Yes. So I don't know that he succumbed to everyone else's opinion of the law. He was just like, all right, this, like, you guys stepped over the line. I'm going to put this aside and I'm going to go take care of business because you don't hurt people that I care about.
I have a question. What led McGowan to finally allow that? Because he's been so up until this point, no drinking, no womanizing, no violence. Why did this episode... He, as an actor and writer and director of the series, chose to break those rules he has set.
Because you need whiskey and girls and guns in a Western. You can't do a Western without whiskey.
You can't, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously by choosing not to take the gun at the beginning, he certainly did. You know what? I think it's certainly a good question. I will read more into it. Part of why I don't want to answer that yet is because I know it's coming up, and unfortunately, there's violence.
Yeah, so I mean, I know things change from this point, but I think...
We're not going to say too much. Don't walk me down the
road. I'm just going to say, I just thought it's interesting that they chose this now. And I guess, too, back into the continuity, I believe from this point forward, these were all filmed in sequence.
Yes.
So... But I was just posing that out there for Steph and the audience. So.
All right, we'll see.
Yeah, check it out. And you know, that's a question, mm-hmm. you know, whether you've seen the series or watching it kind of for the first time as we go with it. Yeah, take note of because it's going to get interesting.
Sweet.
And lines will be drawn, so to speak.
Stop it.
Draw your gun.
That's right.
I would so beat either of you in a draw.
Speaking of that, again, I know we're kind of jumping all over the place, but, you know, obviously the point Amen. We're at is, you know, he gets his gun, he takes away, and
I don't know if you can see, but Meredith drew a gun and it says, bang, bang.
McGowan versus Alexis says he's actually Yes.
Not our
amazing engineer.
Alexis claims to this day that he was faster than Patrick McGoohan. And that if you really slow down the footage that in what was actually shot, he draws his gun first.
Oh, man. Those are some fighting words right there.
Those are, but here's the thing, right? Take, if you watch Unforgiven, it's not about how quick you are. It's about quickness and accuracy and steadiness.
Yeah.
And so he could have missed completely. So it's a matter of, you know, how steady you can be.
That's kind of a, that kind of annoys me.
In what way?
How? I mean,
it annoys me in the way of, it's clear that number six had to win that for the show. For him to be like,
but in any Western TV or movie, the hero has to win.
That's what I'm saying. So for him to be years later, be like, but I was still faster. Sounds a little weird.
He's had to whip it out and just, you know, prove his point. You know how people
it's
can
like,
get.
It's like, yeah, like two dudes, like.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
I feel like it's unnecessary. Unnecessary, actually.
Because I don't think people are really walking away like, oh. McGoohan is faster than Alexis. Like, it's a show.
You know, one fan probably said that to him at a convention, and he got upset about it.
Is it the red hair? Is that what makes him mad?
Yeah. I don't know. This has died. I'm naturally a blonde. I actually hide I hide my dumbness for evilness.
Whoa, smart.
Okay. There you go. You know, let's talk about Kathy because we skipped around on her a little bit. So let's go back to her. There's a photo of her that we have in the Western Saloon.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, completely different as number 22 versus the picture that we have here.
I have a picture dressed like that.
That's amazing.
There you go. So, how did you guys feel about her? I mean, she was quick to fall in love with number six. Obviously, it made sense, perhaps in the Western. But, you know, outside the village.
You know, I thought she was one of, you know, it's been a while that we haven't really had a dynamic female like this in a while. Like, she falls into the tropes of falling for the lead. I get that. But I liked her a lot. I thought she was, Prisoner is known for having really great female characters. And it's something I've talked about many a times, especially given the time period it aired. Well, maybe she fell into a more typical trope of the time that you'd expect. Like, but I felt she, because of it being a Western, she had to follow those tropes. I mean, she was playing a part that was a script she was reading. What I found fascinating was how deep she got into it, that she fell in love with the number six of the Western world and how it affected her in the real world. And I thought that was just, I thought it was a good commentary. Because at that time, we haven't seen anything like this. Now, we can dismiss it and be like, oh, that's so stereotypical. But at the time, I thought, you know, given in context, I liked it.
I would agree.
Yeah, I loved it.
I was very sad.
I know. I wanted to give her a hug.
There's a photo we have of the death scene, which I thought was, I thought was pretty brilliant. You know, just in terms of how it looks and you know, that it's very Western, right? And, so there's McGoohan, there's two crosses, he's in the middle of it all, and, so he sits. You know what, Steph Z, you are a big distraction.
No, okay. we have to share this with the class.
Come on, dude.
Steph will tweet this out, I promise you.
We're going to Instagram out a photo of Steph Z
cosplay.
Looking like Kathy, okay?
Yeah.
So this took about 30 seconds worth of Steph Z's time, so that's why she zoned out.
And then, I'm sorry, I wanted to bring
it
up.
It's pretty fantastic, guys. I assure you it was worth it.
I promise I don't want this after show derailed, much like the prisoners going in a complete different direction.
No, I think
stay course.
We are, but part of the chorus is, you know, falling in love with the derailment.
much like this episode being a lighthearted, fun tele-fantasy, this episode of the Prisoner podcast is a little lighthearted.
Well, I didn't say the prisoner was lighthearted. I think, you know, tele-fantasies in general are lighthearted. This was not. It led to two people's deaths.
For the prisoner, that is pretty lighthearted, Phil.
Okay, yeah.
What she said.
There you go. I agree. Anything else that you guys want to touch on? Because I think overall we covered a lot of this.
Yeah.
You know, but we, you know, even though we went every which way, which is fine.
No, I mean, now I'm excited for what's next, because you guys are making me think that it's just going to keep getting crazier and crazier.
I'm going to take the next 10 seconds
Uh-oh.
And give a spoiler. Okay.
No, I don't want to listen then.
So don't listen.
Okay, turn it out.
All right, so anybody who doesn't want to listen, close your ears. Mm-hmm. Be ready for Alexis Connor to be back in the final episode.
Done. Spoiler That's over.
It. Done.
Oh, good. Good. I didn't hear. Yeah. Be ready for something, but I didn't know what it was.
So that's about it. Anything, again, I think, you know, if you really like Westerns, I think you can get into this episode, and there's a lot there for you.
It's entertaining, and it's well done. Yeah. It's not like there's inconsistencies, you know what I mean? Like, it's well done. I like at the end how everything is, like, cardboard cutouts, and it...
Which, by the way, I think it is a commentary, a lot of people attribute that as a commentary to actual Westerns, because there's various characters that that might as well just be considered cardboard cutouts.
Literally the town. I was actually shocked that they didn't have the town blow over at some point, because they were just, like, facades built on top of buildings, so...
Who knew that was right next to the village?
It makes me wonder what other little fantasy worlds, like, they probably have, like, an old English castle and, you know, different little, like, things that they can put people into.
We'll see next April when we go.
Yeah, we'll find it. We'll give a whole Periscope tour.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Do people still use Periscope? Is that still a thing? Yeah.
Well, hopefully by next April 2016 they still do.
Who knows?
We'll figure out a way. All right. So that's it for Living in Harmony. Thank you guys for always joining us. If you haven't already done so, subscribe, rate, comment, you know. And the number one thing that you can honestly do is just tell a friend. That way you're introducing them to Prisoner if they're not already introduced. And, of course, you're exposing them to us, which we appreciate.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we are nothing without you. We are just a number.
We're just numbers.
We're just numbers without a village.
We're just ISOs.
We're villageless.
Next week, we'll be doing The Girl Who Was Death. Then after that, Once Upon a Time and Fallout. Three left. Can you believe it?
Only three left.
We thought the day would never come.
I like it.
But we're three away from completion. So there you have it. As always, take we've mentioned a lot of social media, so you can chat with us there. Steph Z?
You guys can keep the conversation going with me at IAMSTEFZ. Thanks for watching, listening.
And you can find me at MPLACO. I need a cool, catchy thing. Like, keep the conversation going with Steph Z. That's so good.
And keep on being individuals. Everyone out there, you guys are all my number sixes. Why are you laughing?
I love you, Phil.
I love you. We'll see you guys next week.
BC.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.